Welcome to episode 16 of Book Banter. I'm your host, Alex E. Talander. This episode is brought to you by Angie's List. Next time you need someone to work on your home, repair your car, or fix your teeth, check Angie's List first. You'll find thousands of unbiased ratings on services for home improvements, car repairs, and even doctors. Let Angie's List take away the guesswork. Gain access to thousands of reviews on local service providers for home improvement, accounting, animal care, health care, and even weddings. Join Angie's List and use promo code BOOK to get 25% off your membership. And in this episode, I'll be talking with best-selling author Mike Carey. We'll be talking about his new book, Dead Men's Boots, which is the third in the Felix Caster series. We'll also be talking about some graphic novel projects he's currently working on, as well as some other books he has planned for the future, and what ancient instrument he uses to write on. But first, we'll begin with my review of Dead Men's Boots, which will be followed by the interview, and then my reviews for the first two books in the series, The Devil You Know and Vicious Circle. And now, Dead Men's Boots by Mike Carey. The intrepid exorcist Felix Caster returns under the skilled writing hands of Mike Carey, and this is his biggest adventure yet. After ignoring calls from a fellow exorcist, John Giddings, he finds his friend dead, an apparent suicide, and feels guilty. He agrees to work with Giddings' wife in putting her husband to rest, along with dealing with a slimy lawyer who's trying to execute Giddings' will to be cremated. At the same time, Caster is brought onto a case about a man who's been brutally raped and murdered. As Caster begins putting the facts together, it's starting to look like a dead female serial killer may somehow be behind it all. Joining up with his quasi-friend and succubus-turned-exorcist, Juliet, and importing some help from his zombie friend who always has answers, Nikki Heath, Caster will have to travel to Alabama to get some answers and put the case together. Dead Men's Boots continues in this third book in the excellent series that just gets better with each new release. If only the US could get the books published as fast as the UK, which already has the fourth book out, with the fifth due out this fall. And now my interview with Mike Carey. So, first off, thank you for doing the interview.
Ah, my pleasure.
And what made you decide to become a writer?
I guess it was just something I always sort of enjoyed doing for fun. You know, I didn't become a writer. I always was one. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't making a living out of it. I've always written stories and poems ever since I was a kid. I can remember when I was about 12 years old, making comic books for my younger brother Dave, who would have been 7 at that time. I couldn't draw to save my life. I couldn't draw human figures, so the heroes of the comic books were little animated eggs with arms and legs, because that was the limit of my artistic talent. So, you know, storytelling was something that I always sort of did and always took pleasure in. And as I grew older, it was, you know, something I was doing more and more, and sort of trying to turn into a career, but I was trying to get published. You know.
And so, how did you get involved in doing graphic novels then?
I grew up reading comics, and I think that's true of most comics creators. You know, you don't get into this industry by accident. I think you have to love it. You know, most creators were fanboys or fangirls first.
Yep.
And became writers and artists later. I can remember as a kid reading British comics, British humor comics, Beano the Dandy, and the so-called powerhouse comics, and then graduating to the Lee Kirby Fantastic Four, the early X-Men issues, stuff like that. I began, when I was in my 20s, I began to write comics journalism, to do reviews for fanzines, for amateur magazines, and then to do longer feature articles for amateur publications. And then I kind of drifted into submitting pictures from that, really.
And so then how did you make the next step to wanting to do books?
Again, it was something I'd always done. I actually submitted about 3 novels to publishers before I ever tried my hand at comics, but they were awful, awful, shapeless things, because I'd never learned how to plan a story.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about structure. So I would just write chapter 1, and then I would sit there staring at the typewriter until an idea for chapter 2 occurred to me, and so on. You know, just repeat until you're finished. So they were not publishable. They were horrible things. And I got a lot of feedback to that effect. You know, this would be good if it had a story. writing comics was the best training you could possibly have, right. Really, in terms of making you sensitive to structure, making you plot, making you sort of budget story beats.
Where did the character of Felix Caster come from?
I guess he had a sort of a fairly complicated genesis. I was writing Hellblazer at the time when I first pitched Caster, and I think there are some elements of
John Constantine
In the character.
In a good way.
Thank you. But also, I'm a big fan of Raymond Chandler and of noir movies. I admit I haven't read widely in noir beyond the Chandler books, but I love some of the sort of the key tropes of noir. And it occurred to me that you could do a supernatural noir by the simple expedient of taking a Philip Marlowe character, you know, a gumshoe detective, and just swapping him out. So the first idea for Caster was that he would be a Raymond Chandler private eye, but instead of solving crimes for money, he slays ghosts for money. You know, he banishes ghosts for money.
And what sort of research does the series require?
I'm a huge fraud when it comes to research. I research the locations pretty scrupulously. I like to make sure that the real world references are as real as they possibly can be. When it comes to the sort of the magic and stuff, I make it up. I'm not the slightest bit like Alan Moore. You know, I have an interest, a sort of a layman's interest in the academic traditions of magic, but I don't try to make the magical rituals in Caster at all authentic. So I think what's important is that you need to do enough to make the audience suspend their disbelief. You know, the key thing is not to break the spell of the story. If people start catching you out in factual inaccuracies, then the story's screwed. You know, I was talking to an American interviewer just recently, who pointed out that in the third Caster novel, in Dead Men's Boots, there's a sequence where somebody is being attacked by a demon and tries to fire his revolver at this demon, and his handgun rather. The trigger, the hammer clicks on an empty chamber, and so he tries to slap in a new slide of ammunition, but he's killed before he can do it. And I'd confuse two different kinds of gun, because if there are empty chambers, then it's a revolver-style handgun.
Right.
If there's a clip of ammunition, then there aren't chambers. It's a different thing. There's no hammer hitting the chamber. It would just be that the slide stayed open. So that was a case of me not doing enough research to keep the illusion intact. But I think that's your first duty as a writer, is to make sure that people don't keep tripping over stuff like that.
Yep. So the third book, Dead Men's Boots, as you mentioned, it's now available, while the fourth book, Thicker Than Water, is also available in the UK. Why is the US behind in the series, and will we ever catch up over here?
The US is behind because we didn't sell the rights immediately. You know, the Orbit, my British publishers, my UK publishers, are also the agents for foreign rights sales of Caster, and they shopped it around a fair bit in a number of countries, and they eventually went with Grand Central in the US. But that was what caused the initial time delay. Will America catch up? It kind of depends how quickly I write the books, because the American publishing plan is to have one book coming out in hardcover each year, and the previous year's book then going into mass market edition.
So basically you need to slow down and then we can catch up.
Yeah, let America catch up.
And has the series been optioned for a movie or a TV series at all?
It was the TV rights we sold very quickly to a British producer, Bentley, but they never did anything with it. Shortly after they acquired the rights, they basically stopped doing their research and development arm was folded, and so the rights came back to us in reversion. We are now talking to a US producer, and we seem to be very close to a deal, touch wood, on that. So it's looking like a Caster movie is a real possibility.
So one of your recent graphic novel projects is Ender's Game. How did this come about, and will you be doing more in that series?
It's Ender's Shadow, in fact.
Sorry.
Chris Yost is writing Ender's Game. It came about because the editor who was attached to the project right at the start was of Marvel, was Ralph Macchio, who I've worked with on a lot of different Ultimate books. And he phoned me up and asked me if I would be interested. I love the original novel, Ender's Game, and I think that Ender's Shadow is the best of the sequels. So I said, yeah, I would definitely like to try out for it. Having previously adapted Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere into comic form, so I knew what it felt like to adapt a novel, and I enjoy it. I enjoy the process very much. It's different from writing your own stuff, but it's a very pleasurable experience. So I gave them a pitch, a sort of breakdown of the book into 10 issues, and they approved it. And it's been wild fun. Yeah, I really I love the book. I think the book is an extraordinary piece of work. Are you familiar with the end of it?
Yeah, I've done the first one so far. Just it gets confusing because there's like different tangents of series and stuff like that, so I haven't got around to reading more.
Right, yeah, it's actually sort of very extensive now.
Yeah.
But what's extraordinary about Ender's Shadow is that Orson Scott Card had written 3 sequels to the original novel, and then there was a period when he wasn't writing Ender novels, and then when he came back to the series, instead of taking Ender's story further, he went back to the events of the original novel, Ender's Game, and retold them from the perspective of a supporting character, Bean.
Yeah, which was a very different thing.
Yeah, it was exactly a very different animal from all of the sequels that had preceded it. And it succeeded, I think, in sort of throwing new light on Ender's story, but also sort of giving you a different perspective on the world in which these events are happening. You know, you see the impact of the previous formic wars on Earth through Bean's very, very harsh upbringing in Rotterdam. I thought it was a very, very cool book. And the artist that I'm working with on the book, Sebastian Fiumara, is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. He's like a young Carlos Ascara. Yeah, he gets so much emotional power in his line. It's been great.
And so can you talk a little about some other projects you're working on right now?
Well, I'm still writing X-Men Legacy for Marvel. Legacy was Professor Xavier's book for a little over a year. Now it's Rogue's book. We've sort of ended we've brought the Professor Xavier arc to a suitable climax, and Coda. And now it's Rogue. Rogue has come back into the sort of the orbit of the other X-Men. She's joined them in San Francisco, and she's going to be given a new sort of role in the X-Men by Cyclops, and the book going forward will be dealing with how that plays out. I also have a new book coming out, which has just come out from DC Vertigo, The Unwritten. We're three issues in, and the fourth issue comes out I think next week. And that's a sort of labor of love. It's a creator-owned book, first creator-owned book I've done since Crossing Midnight. And also the first time I've worked with Peter Gross since Lucifer, which is quite a long time ago now. We really sort of enjoy collaborating, and we seem to bring out the best in each other. and we wanted, even back when Lucifer was still, writing and drawing Lucifer, we were trying to get another book up and running then, but it didn't quite happen. So it's been a goal of ours to get another Vertigo project on the table for quite some time. And The Unwritten is it.
And do you have plans to make it as long, like a long series like Lucifer 2?
It will be, if God spares us all, if it finds its audience, if everything works out okay, then the idea is, yes, it will be a long but finite series, coming to a conclusion that we already have planned out. But as always, the hopeful journeying is as important as the destination.
Yeah. And do you have any plans to do like another standalone novel or possibly another series?
Definitely a standalone novel, yes. I'm putting together a pitch for another short series at the moment, a trilogy possibly. But also I'm working with my wife and daughter on a novel, which would be standalone. It's kind of a fantasy with which appears to be sort of all soft and cuddly and then turns out to have pretty serious political overtones. But it's taken us a long, long time to plan it and write it because we have very busy lives in a lot of different arenas, and just finding the time to all sit together and work it through is a day-to-day challenge.
So what do you use to write on? What's your instrument?
I have a computer. It's one of the least reliable computers in the world. It had a complete motherboard failure about 3 years ago, and it was close to the point where you would take it out behind the barn and shoot it. But a friend of mine said, I can get that working for you. I can resurrect it with voodoo. And he did. He sort of took all the gubbins out and put it back together again. And it did work. The soundboard no longer works, so it has no sound. Most of the USB ports are dead. There are only two functional USB ports, one of which I use for a mouse and the other for a wireless dongle. And that's pretty much it. It's very, very slow. It's very cranky. You have to sort of mollycoddle it quite a lot. But there's no distractions because it can't it can't handle multimedia content or anything. So it's just basically a typewriter with a printer attached. It's a strange thing. But that's my tool. I use Microsoft Word except when I'm doing screenplays. I use Final Draft for screenplays. A very old version of Final Draft. That's basically it, yeah.
And so when you're doing a graphic novel, how does your collaborative process work? Do you work together with the person, or is it a case of emailing stuff back and forth?
It depends very much on the artist. It depends on the dynamic that we work out between us. With Peter Gross, there's a lot of both a lot of emailing and a lot of phone calls. Pontac Pictured Shows, who is the editor on The Unwritten, hooks us up, I guess, once every couple of weeks for a very long conference call. We sort of talk about all the stuff that's going on in the book. We do a lot of forward planning. We review the latest script that I've done or the latest pages that Peter's done and so on. With some artists, I admit, it's far less collaborative than that. I have, on occasion, just sort of dropped the script into the well and then sort of got the finished art. But yeah, the editor's doing his job. Most of my editors are very good at their jobs. You tend to see page roughs, you tend to see pencils, so you feed into the process at different stages. The only question is, do you do that directly to the artist or do you do it through the editor?
Do you have any writing advice for writers looking to get published?
In comics or in prose?
Well, that's my next question, so we can do both.
I think my own experience is probably already out of date. I mean, the way I did it was incredibly slow and tortuous. It took me the best part of a decade to get published, and that was because I was really slow and tentative about it. I did reviews for many years before I started writing feature articles. Mm-hmm. I did feature articles for many years before I dared to pitch a script. I could have done the whole thing a lot faster, I think. But I would say some of the best advice I've ever been given. One piece by Karen Berger and one piece by Peter Gross. Karen Berger, when I said to her once, before I ever had anything published, when I met her at a UK convention, I said I was looking for the big break, and she said there is no big break. What there is a long, long series of little breaks,
and each of them
moves you a little bit closer to where you're going. And I think that's true. So there will be times when you feel like you're getting nowhere, but you're not getting nowhere. Every piece of experience counts. Every time you make contact with a publisher or with an editor, it counts. Every time you write a script, it counts. You get better at your craft and so on. The little breaks build up. I would say that, so don't get discouraged. And Peter Gross once said to me, and I don't know whether this is something he came up with himself or if he was quoting someone else, there are three great qualities, three desirable qualities in a writer or an artist. To be very good, to be very fast, or to be very nice. And he said, in comics, you can get away with any two out of the three. but if you don't have two, you're sunk. and I think that's true, too. But, yeah, just keep at it would be my advice. There were so many times when I thought, this is hopeless, this is a waste of time. But, yeah. You know, lo and behold, here I am now making a living out of it and making it, you know, really enjoying what I'm doing. And if you get disillusioned and back off at the first few hurdles, then you won't get there. But if you plow on, if you really are serious about doing it, then you can make it happen. I know it sounds kind of romantic and unrealistic. Because the downside of it is you have to work. You have to work at it. You have to sort of you have to plug and plug away at your craft. You have to learn the mechanics of writing. And the only way to do that is by doing a hell of a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you like to read in your spare time, if you have any?
I've always been a sort of very, very avid reader of sci-fi and fantasy. You know, most of my reading is in speculative fiction. In terms of mainstream fiction, there are some 18th century novels I love. Tristram Shandy, I think it's a fantastic read. I've read it several times. But mostly I read sci-fi and fantasy. So, you know, China Mieville, Ursula Le Guin, Ted Chiang writes fantastic sci-fi short stories. I was addicted to Michael Moorcock for a long time. Mm-hmm. Gene Wolfe's Torturer books, I think, are superb. Neil Gaiman. In comics, anything by Gaiman, anything by Grant Morrison, anything by Alan Moore. They've always been kind of my holy trinity.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm loving Gail Simone's Secret Six. I think that's a fantastic book. I think what Craig Kyle and Chris Yost are doing on X-Force is mind-blasting fun.
And do you have any hobbies you like to do?
Hobbies? No. I write and I read. Very occasionally. We went on holiday last year and we did some whitewater rafting, and that was great. That was wonderful. I'd love to do more of that.
Was that in England or was it somewhere else?
No, that was in America, Pennsylvania and New York State. We whitewater rafted on the Hudson, which was fantastic. It was an unforgettable experience. But in England, we have a much tamer version of that experience, which is called punting, which is you take out a flat bottom boat, which you propel forward with a pole, a 12-foot long pole. On the River Charwell or the Isis, you know, any river that's kind of shallow along its whole length. So we do that a lot as well. I'm lousy at most activities that involve any kind of physical coordination, but I can punt.
Okay, and then for my last question, do you have a favorite British TV show?
British TV show. Okay, well, avoiding the obvious, because Doctor Who is great at the moment, and we really enjoy that. I think I would say either Sapphire and Steel, which is a 1960s, 1970s sci-fi show starring David McCallum and Joanna Lumley as two operatives from a higher plane of reality working on Earth. The great MacGuffin there was the enemy was time. Time is always, the past and the future are always trying to break into the present, and their job is to stop it from happening. That was a great show, really scary. And there was a TV drama from the 1980s called Edge of Darkness, screenplay by Troy Kennedy Martin. It starred Joe Don Baker and Bob Peck and Joanne Whalley before she married Val Kilmer. And that was fantastic, wonderful, wonderful drama. Stands up to repeated viewings.
And are you watching anything right now? Or?
That's current. No, we watch stuff on DVD. We actually at the moment we don't even have our TV plugged into an aerial. we watch nothing on live broadcast. We get our news from the newspapers or from internet feeds. We're watching more American drama, to be honest. We're following about a dozen American shows.
Okay, well, that concludes the interview, and thank you very much.
Cheers, Alex. Good to talk. Take care, man.
And that was me talking with Mike Carey. And now we move on to my review of the first book in the Felix Casta series, The Devil You Know. Mike Carey, a well-known writer for the successful comic book series Lucifer and Hellblazer, makes his debut in the world of novel writing. The Devil You Know includes story and character elements from his comic book writing, but also has its own individual feel about it. Felix Casta is a similar character to John Constantine, but this is also Carey's style, and one big reason why people enjoy his work. Welcome to a somewhat alternate world, where it seems to be the present day in cold and gloomy London, except that in this world, ghosts and zombies exist. Now, I'm not saying they're walking around like ordinary people. Well, actually, in some cases they do just that. It's a world where those who know about the reality of some of the dead coming back to life pretend it isn't going on. In most cases, the zombies are more dead people who aren't exactly sure why they're still alive, but keep themselves well hidden from being recognized for what they are. While ghosts have a reason for not being able to move on to the next life, are trapped where they are, to relive the suffering they experienced at their deaths. Enter Felix Casta, a ne'er-do-well, down-and-out, alcoholic, depressed, impoverished exorcist, who is currently taking a break from work after his last exorcism, leaving a close friend doomed with a demon trapped inside him. And yet he needs money to pay for things like food and a place to stay, so when an opportunity is offered to him, he takes it and finds himself investigating a ghost sighting at the prestigious Boddington Archive, where the incorporeal spirit has recently physically attacked one of the archivists. The Devil You Know takes a few pages to get up and running, but as Casta puts more and more pieces together, the mystery expands and becomes more complex, as more characters and details are added and the conspiracy begins to grow. Near the end, it seems like anyone and everyone could be to blame, and it will be up to Casta, who is everyone's enemy at the moment, to solve the case and hopefully free the ghost. And finally, my review for Vicious Circle. Mike Carey, author of the great graphic novel series Lucifer, and after the success of The Devil You Know, the first in his Felix Casta series, returns with the next installment in Vicious Circle. Nothing much has changed for Casta. Life is still really tough on him. He's not making a lot of money and taking whatever jobs he can to stay afloat. Meanwhile, his emotional baggage and history continue to weigh on him, as he tries to ignore his past. But then he mysteriously lands a job that promises to pay well, and does it first. He must track down a girl, well, actually the dead body of a girl, well, specifically the ghost of a dead girl whose parents have lost contact with her and won her back. Casta also gets called on to help a succubus who has turned over a new leaf, even if she is still extremely tantalizing, to find out what is going on in a church that left people dead and the surrounding neighborhood terrified. Finally, he helps out the Metropolitan Police Department, with some very strange and satanic homicide cases. As the story develops, the plot thickens, and it's no real surprise that everything is linked. Seeking out the help of a zombie friend to get him some info, something really weird is also going on in London. People keep dying, more so than usual. Casta finds himself up to his neck, deep in it, and this time, if he doesn't do it right, he won't survive. Neither will his friends, the only people he cares about. Carey ratchets up the adventure, the mystery, and the excitement with Vicious Circle, that will leave readers gasping for breath at Casta's near misses, as he barely survives to fight another day. And that concludes this episode of Book Banter. Thank you for joining me. Please join me next time on October 1st. We'll have a brand new episode. For now, you can check out bookbanter.net, where you have all the rest of the episodes of the series, as well as lots of book reviews and some links to other sites. If you would like to contact me for any comments or questions, just send an email to alex@bookbanter.net, and I'll be sure to reply. For now, thanks for listening, and see you next time.